What's going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, Three and Out Podcast. That's me. That's the show. It is recording this actually on Thursday morning. So as of right now, the Cleveland Browns, the only team in the league that doesn't have a coach. We'll dive into the something that it really hit me this week, just talking to people in the league and the wealth that is being distributed, not just to head coaches, but to assistant coaches. And the NFL is the new Wall Street. You know, they say kids play baseball. You know, that's something on social media. Tell your kids to play baseball whenever Garrett Cole gets a $300 million contract. The reality is one of those gets given out a year, and the majority of baseball players wash out before they ever sniff the big leagues. I got one for you. If you want to tweet something, kids, become an offensive coordinator because that's where the money is. Some thoughts on the Joe Judge, Matt Rhule, you know, hirings. The Joe Judge one definitely came out of left field. I watched McCarthy's press conference yesterday. You know, most guys, and listen, my weight can fluctuate. You know, sources say about 2 years ago I was about 215 pounds. You know, and at 5'10", that's not a great body type for me. You know, I've changed my diet back into the 180s. But McCarthy, typically when you take a year off, you lose some LBs. But he's gotten a little bigger. But again, I come from a big family. I'm not judging. But he looks ready to roll. Jerry's a beauty. And then the weekend games, the divisional round, the final eight, as they call it in college basketball, right? The Elite Eight. Got some really good games, some really good teams, some really good quarterbacks. We'll dive into that. And then the Middlecoff mailbag at John Middlecoff is my Instagram handle, also my Twitter handle, also my YouTube channel. I'm going to start doing some YouTubes, but Instagram is where you get a hold of me for this show. It's how we interact with the people. We're the common man show. Easiest guy. I'm actually much easier to get a hold of through Twitter or Instagram DMs than I am if you call me. I probably won't pick up unless you're someone important. So yeah, Instagram DM me and I will read your question here on the show. Do it all the time. And okay, let's start here. Listen, there's been a lot of talk about the Rooney Rule and everything that's going on. It's pretty simple. It's a screwed up situation right now. And I think not just for African-American guys, I think for defensive coaches are fighting an uphill battle. If Robert Saleh, if Wink Martindale had been offensive coordinators, they would have got jobs. Or they would have had a much better chance. Now, as I'm recording this, one of those guys may end up the Browns coach. I don't know. It kind of feels like Josh McDaniels, but you can never depend on Josh McDaniels because at any moment he can pull out. So I'm just a white guy. I'm not going to go on some spiel here. No one really wants to hear it. But it's clear. I know Ron Rivera. I also think this. There were five openings, right? There was the Cowboys, the Panthers, Cleveland Browns, still unopened, the Giants, and the Dallas Cowboys. Well, two of those were filled with quote-unquote retreads, guys that were getting a second opportunity. Now, one of those guys was a Latino in Ron Rivera, but I think the last couple years we've seen a lot of new guys get jobs. Last year, it was every, you know, 36-year-old bro that had met Sean McVay, so I get why everyone was mad last year, because last year was a joke. This year, I think, for the most part, besides Joe Judge, like Matt Rhule was getting a job. Whether he was black, whether he was white, whether he was purple, like Matt Rhule was the top candidate on the market. If he wanted to go to the Cleveland Browns and Cleveland, I'm in, they would have taken him. If he would have told the Giants, I want in from the jump, which he didn't, he would have got the job. So he was just the number one candidate, right or wrong. I don't know much about the guy. Just in terms of as a coach, people keep asking me, like, what does he hang his hat on? And we'll get into Matt Rhule a little bit later. I don't know. I mean, he's an offensive guy, but he's coached defense before. He's a program builder. My buddies that have gone through Temple and Baylor love the guy. If you watched his press conference yesterday, it was freaking awesome. I was like, God, I love this guy. He had a great tan. I guess he had just been at Cabo. But yeah, but start with this. And I think there's a lot of, like, these guys aren't getting opportunities. Not even race-wise, but just coordinators. It's hard. Here's what I know. When I was growing up, if you wanted to make big money, and listen, I'm from a small town, Davis, by Sacramento. My dad was a farmer. It's not like we were thinking about going to Wall Street. But it was pretty clear if you wanted to become like a millionaire, and definitely once I got to college, most people talked about you had to go into finance. You had to go into real estate, you know, to make 500 grand, to make 800 grand. That was big time money. I mean, it still is. I mean, if you're making 500 grr a year, you're doing really well in this country. You're what we call the one percenters. Well, here's what I know. And I texted around because the explosion of football has led to CEO money for coaches. And the good coaches, Belichick, Andy Reid, Pete Carroll, are worth every penny. Have no problem paying the guy leading my franchise $10 to $15 million when my franchise is worth several billion dollars and we're winning and printing cash. You could argue they're underpaid. Like, what is Andy Reid worth to the Chiefs? Because I know this, before he got there, they were a joke. No one cared about them. Since he's been there, they go to the playoffs every year. They're on primetime games. The Hunt family has probably doubled their revenue over the last 5 years. So I'd argue Andy Reid's underpaid. I'd argue right now what Kyle Shanahan's doing for Jed York, and I haven't exactly got his number. I think it's right. High sixes, low 70s, underpaid. The money he's generating. But regardless, you make $5 to $15 million, you're a 1% of the 1%ers. So we understand that. But I think the most undervalued and just under-talked about and underappreciated amount of wealth being distributed, because know this, like the San Francisco Giants in my backyard just hired Gabe Kapler. I would imagine the Giants are paying Gabe Kapler high six figures. He's not even making $1 million. I would imagine most coaches on his staff, hitting coach, first base coach, some of them might be making five figures, like $90,000. They're getting nothing. In the NBA, I bet there are five total assistants that make over $1 million. Maybe a couple more than that, but not many. The wealth is not being distributed that way. In the NFL, texting around, do you know that every defensive coordinator in the NFL in 2019 made over $1 million? Every single one made over $1 million. According to my sources, 30 of the 32 offensive coordinators. And think about this. Just close your eyes. Think about the NFL. How many head coaches are now offensive coordinators? So the quote-unquote offensive coordinator is not even calling plays. So a good majority of offensive coordinators who are not calling plays made over $1 million. And then those couple of guys that did not make over $1 million are $800,000 to $900,000. Again, think how many people in your life, business owners, real estate, whoever you know, the richest people, make $1 million and are not even the boss. The amount of wealth that is being given out in the NFL right now is Wall Street level. It is stupid. As someone told me earlier this year, or like a week ago, that was in charge of coaching hirings and firings, he's like, in 2005, we paid our coach less than $2 million, our head coach. He's now a coordinator in the league, and he makes more than that. So the explosion of money for coaches and assistant coaches specifically has never been better. So when you see tweets, tell your kids to play baseball, no. Tell your kids to coach offense. Tell your kids to learn coverages. Because right now, the NFL coaching community is the new Wall Street. That type of money is outrageous. And I also think when you read about these organizations that butt heads internally, think about whatever your office is. And most of our offices are much less money than the amount of money that's going on in the NFL. But if you're a guy, let's say, that makes $70,000, and you're working with, not for, a guy that makes $300,000, and you think that guy is an idiot or not very good at his job, think how much, and you're forced to work with him on a day-to-day basis, think how much just animosity and anger, jealousy, all the emotions that are created by money, because that is, I would say, the biggest creator of highs and lows emotionally in this country that we live in, are just how much people make. You compare yourself to your friends, your coworkers. That's just human nature, right? It's what you, your wife, your friends, it's what we all talk about. How much money everyone makes. It's like the number one gossip topic. Hell, I do it for a living with NFL people, but I'm just saying we do it with our friends and family. So in the NFL, GMs, the majority of them all make seven figures. But their right-hand guy, like the player personnel guy, definitely college directors, those guys are making anywhere from $200,000 to $500,000. So there was a huge discrepancy of money between like the GM's right-hand guy and the offensive coordinator. So when you see these teams that are struggling and you go, I think our offensive coordinator is terrible, and you know he's making $1.6 million and you're making $400,000 and you're going, you know what? I'm providing him with really good players and we're 4-9. What is going on? That's where a lot of this animosity gets created. They can say it's over tension and over power. It's over money. It's over the jealousy of how much money these guys get paid. And I have no, like, I wouldn't be jealous if my coach is Andy Reid or Kyle Shanahan, or my defensive line coach is like the guy the 49ers have, or my, you know, you just go around. When you have good coaches, you don't even think about it. It doesn't bother you. But when you don't, and let's call a spade, like in any business, the majority of coaches are going to be way less qualified in the top end. That's just the way life works, right? You have in any industry, let's say you have 100 people, 10 of those guys are just dramatically better than like the 50 guys and below. And then from like 51 to 89, those guys are solid, but there is a huge difference between the 95th guy and the third guy. It's like the size of the Grand Canyon. It's no different in the NFL. It's no different in the insurance business. It's like that in any business. So I think when you look at the NFL and the amount of money that's given out, it's why that's created so much animosity between front offices, between coaches. But I also struggle when we hear about, you know, this guy's just not getting an opportunity. Well, you find me a job in America, and don't ever get it twisted that the NFL, unlike the NBA and baseball, has created way more millionaires than any one of those two sports. And it ain't even close. Now, a big factor is they got way more players, but that means way more people are getting paid. And the other side of the coin is their coaches are also getting paid, which is not happening in basketball. Think about, remember Phil Jackson when he coached the Lakers? I think was making like $10 to $12 million on like the latter half when like the Kobe, Pau Gasol. Those days are over. That will never happen. You know that NBA GMs are so jealous of Major League Baseball, where they're paying their guys $750,000 to be the manager of the New York Mets or whatever. That's what they desire to do in the NBA. And that'll happen one day, the more and more Daryl Morey's and analytical people run basketball, that they want to have middle management coaching their team. Because it's all just based on the spreadsheet. That will never happen in football, because coaching is just way too important. It's a scheme-based game, just like players are really important. But it's the combination of it both. And both of them are getting filthy rich. Obviously, the players are getting more rich, I mean, beside like the head coaches. But these coordinators, so if you become a defensive coordinator, let's say for the Dallas Cowboys, like Mike Nolan looks like he's going to become the defensive coordinator for the Cowboys. He'll probably sign a deal between $1.8 and $2.2 million a year. And he's already a millionaire. He's been making, I mean, he made $1 million way back in the day with the 49ers or whatever when he was the head coach. So he'll sign a 3 to 4 year deal. Let's average it at about $2 million a year. Let's say it's $2.5 million a year to be the defensive coordinator. Like, turn on CNBC right now or Google how much some executives make, because he's not the CEO. He's not the head coach. He's not the general manager. Like, if you put him in a hierarchy chart in any other business, he's like the 10th most important guy in the building. And he's signing a guaranteed contract probably of like $8 million if he signs a 4 year deal. And we're like, these guys just don't get the opportunity. These guys, everyone's getting filthy rich. Every single person. It's something that's kind of wearing on me. Like, I'm tired of like these coordinators, man. Now they're not getting screwed. They are cashing in. They are changing the direction of their family. And I don't even have an end-all, be-all to this ultimate take. Just know this. When you see your coordinator, if he's good, applaud him. You're like, God, he's worth every penny. But if he's not, the animosity in that building is probably running high, because where I come from, we got a lot of guys stealing cash. Okay, let's dive into the Giants and the Carolina Panthers. And let's start with this. The New York Football Giants are the bigger of the two teams in the city of New York. They have made, I would say, over the last 20 years, while the sport has economically, you know, really, really grown. You know, it was really big before that, but economically took off into another stratosphere, into a league of its own right now. And teams like the Cowboys, the Patriots benefited the most, but the Giants, I would say, are on the list of a top five franchise over that period of time, up until this day, as I keep talking, of just printing this thing that we like to call cash. And John Mara, for a long period of time, he looks the part, right? Like, that's what an elite, rich, dignitary leader looks like. Tall, skinny, shirt tucked in. Just looks like some guy that would be in charge of the board of directors at his local country club. And then he started thinking, John Mara, this guy wasn't like elected to the position. He didn't buy the team. His grandpa bought the team in 1925. So he's not a rich kid. He's a rich kid's kid. And while he's had success on his watch, he won two Super Bowls in the last 15 years. What did he really do? Because when you look back on it, they had two teams that were wild card teams that got hot, and Eli carried them to Super Bowl championships. Did he like give Eli high fives after the game? Good job, Coach Coughlin. Now, has he, you know, kept the image of the New York Giants at an all-time high previous to these last 4 or 5 years? For sure. But I heard a stat, I think yesterday, somewhere on the internet, might have been, I think I heard Mike Lombardi, something got retweeted into my timeline, that no team has lost more games over the last 5 years than the New York Giants. So this notion that John Mara, does he have much in common with Dave Tepper? A self-made billionaire who bought into the NFL at a peak price? Like, it can't get any more expensive than $2 plus billion for a franchise. Think about this. Mara's grandpa, not Wellington was Mara's dad. I think Mara's grandpa might have been Tim. Sorry if I'm screwing up my Giants history. In 1925, paid $500. Now, with inflation, $500 is probably a lot of money in 1925. But it ain't $2 billion. So Dave Tepper and John Mara, besides just being rich guys, don't have much in common. One guy started from nothing, made it all on his own. The other guy inherited a team that his dad inherited. So this notion that John Mara has much in common with a Robert Kraft, a Jerry Jones, again, self-made guys that bought the team themselves, he doesn't. But I think he's kind of viewed that way. And if you look, he fired McAdoo at the end of 2017. I can't remember the exact date, but there were still games left. Might have been one, might have been more. Then he hired Pat Shurmur early in 2018. So from late 2017 to where we are in early 2020, it's about 2 years and maybe a month, he said three head coaches. He gave Pat Shurmur, one of the most overhyped, I mean, no one would want him as their head coach. Literally nobody. Yet he did. Gave him a five-year deal. So he still owes him $3 million. But money doesn't mean anything to these guys because they have an unlimited amount. Literally an unlimited amount. They will get a check in 2020 from the league. I think the last year's check was like $270 million. I would expect that number to be around $300 million from the league. That doesn't even count the suite sales, the merch, the Saquon sales, the ticket sales, the parking lot sales, everything that you also generate money on that he gets to pocket. And John Mara, who needed a head coach, has one of the major franchises, not just in the NFL, but in American sports. You could argue worldwide sports. His fan base is massive. And this is not an indictment on Joe Judge. I've talked to countless people, people that have worked with Joe Judge, people in the league that have just heard about Joe Judge. I have not heard a negative thing. But Joe Judge was a 37, 38-year-old special teams coach for Bill Belichick, which is impressive. Special teams is something that means a lot to Bill Belichick. And for whatever reason, like, the franchise with the Giants is not the problem. But when you keep Old Man River, a.k.a. Total Clown Show, a.k.a. Dave Gettleman, on as your general manager, your franchise immediately becomes toxic. Let me repeat that again. Your franchise is toxic as long as you have Dave Gettleman there. No one wants to touch that guy with a 10-foot pole. except a guy like Joe Judge, which I would imagine in 2019 for the New England Patriots was making somewhere between $700,000 and $900,000. I've been told through a good source his number with the Giants would be well over $6 million a year. Now, he might have taken the Mississippi State job, but if you're the Giants, you're like, you're going to take the Mississippi State job over our job, and the Mississippi State job is going to pay you $6 million, no chance. But Jimmy Sexton, really good agent. He can drive up a price. The other thing is, we talk a lot about these owners. Do you know who controls the hiring process? Trace Armstrong, number one coaching agent. Jimmy Sexton, number two. I mean, they're both the most important coaching agents, those two guys. They control the hiring process. They're the ones feeding the clients. They're the most undervalued part of this whole equation. They're in control. This is Jimmy Sexton and Trace Armstrong's show. They're placing coaches. They're creating demand. They're creating the stories that you read on Twitter. It's all from them. They're the puppet masters. Don't get that twisted, because that's a fact. That's not an opinion. And I don't blame them. I'm a capitalist. I would generate the money too. I would want my client to go from making $800,000 to $6.5 million a year too. 1,000,000%. You know why? Because if you're that coaching agent, you make a lot more money off that guy. No different than a player. But Dave Gettleman has ruined the Giants franchise. Not talent-wise. I mean, he's drafting, you know, Saquon Barkley. Again, my mom could have picked a running back number two overall. I don't give you credit for that. Danny Dimes, the jury is out. Traded Odell Beckham, got a defensive tackle back for him and a box safety. So we can argue all we want about the ability of his to evaluate, but there is, he's telling people in these interviews, I'm picking the players. Like, that's who this isn't Ozzie Newsome. This isn't Sean McVay's grandpa. This is Dave Gettleman, who, you talk to anyone in the NFL, they go, did you watch his press conference? Is this guy lost his mind? And then you have Matt Rhule, who was clearly the number one candidate on the market over any assistant and any college coach. I would say even above Lincoln Riley. Besides, like, McCarthy and Rivera were wild cards because they were quote-unquote retreads, but both retreads that have had a lot of success. McCarthy's won 10 playoff games, Super Bowl. Rivera's been to the playoffs countless times, been to a Super Bowl. They were really good candidates too. But Matt Rhule was getting a job. And Matt Rhule was a New Jersey guy, had worked for the Giants. But under no circumstances was he going to be the New York Giants head coach, with as long as Dave Gettleman was there. And I saw a Robert Klemko tweet. I think he works for MMQB still. And he wrote that people in the league are mad that a first-time head coach got as much money as Matt Rhule got. And he got a 7-year deal worth $60 million. You do the math. You know, it's like $8-plus million a year. But here's the thing. As someone in the league told me, Matt Rhule, unlike Joe Judge, was not making $800,000 last year. He was making over $7 million in a state that does not have income tax. So when you make $7.2 million at Baylor, which when you say it out loud, that is freaking insane. Think of the money college sports are generating. If Baylor can pay a coach $7.2 million, now he's worth it. But you and all these owners are mad. How could you pay a coach that much money? Well, you idiots. How do you think the world works? You think he was going to take a pay cut to leave his job? No. And if he was going to leave his job, he'd need a couple things. One, security. And usually when you're going to leave a really good job, you're going to need a pay increase. So, yeah, Dave Tepper was going to have to pay him more money than he was making at Texas. Here's the other thing. I don't know much about Charlotte, but I'd imagine it's a lot cheaper to live in Waco, Texas than it is Charlotte. So there's a cost of living aspect. There's a move the family aspect. There's a, I got all the damn power. I'm in control. I'm the one that everyone wants. And Matt Rhule would not have been bad for the Maras. And they could have afforded that. And I've crushed them for being cheap. But the money I hear they're paying Joe Judge, they're not cheap. They're paying him huge money. Now, we could argue if he's worth that much cash or not. No one knows. And this is not about who's going to be. There's a chance that Joe Judge is a much better coach than Matt Rhule. That is very, very plausible as we sit here today. But that's not the point of this conversation. It's simply that you didn't even have a chance at Matt Rhule because you have Dave Gettleman, a guy that every owner worth their salt would have got rid of. But of course they don't want to get rid of him because they're living in the past, they're holding on to things they're comfortable with. They don't want a general manager that they don't know. because they are a general manager first organization, even though now in 2020, Dave Gettleman ain't making $6 plus million. The head coach makes a lot more money than the general manager. But the general manager, who watches games typically with the NFL owners, just has a unique insight of kind of speaking their language. Now, I hope Dave Gettleman isn't speaking the owner's language, but in theory, that's the way it works around the league. But this notion that Dave Gettleman, or that Dave Tepper, again, a self-made billionaire, a lifetime closer, a guy that has been known as the number one guy on Wall Street for a couple decades, a guy that bought into the NFL, you know, at peak prices years ago to get in with the Pittsburgh Steelers, who then paid a premium for a franchise in a smaller market, was going to get a high-level coach. And the going rate for Matt Rhule was not, you know, 5 years, $30 million, given how much he was making. If you want to get Lincoln Riley, whenever Lincoln Riley is going to get paid, might cost you $100 million. He lives in Norman, Oklahoma. He makes anywhere between $6 and $8 million. And everywhere he goes, everything he does, I would imagine the local school gives him free tuition. I would imagine the Tahoe he drives and his wife drives and the Mercedes are free from the local dealership. Everything he does is free. On top of all the money he's making, which he is just banking, in a town that costs nothing to live. So yeah, when Lincoln Riley, if he eventually makes the jump and you see, oh my God, so-and-so team gave Lincoln Riley 6 years, $80 million. Well, yeah, that's, if I'm making right now $200,000, I'm just going to throw out a random number. If you want to get my services, and right now I work for myself, I have complete control, what do you think it would cost me to then come work for you? It ain't $200,000. Given my happiness and my control, I'd argue you'd have to double it to get me to even think. Because if you're happy, and content's the wrong word, but you're in a very good spot, let's use the number $75,000. If you're making $75,000 in a job and you're very happy and your kids are healthy and everything's going well and you like the people you work with, you're not going to just take some other random job for $70,000 or even $80,000. Wouldn't it cost you probably $120,000 to make a move? This is just basic business. So I give Dave Tepper a standing ovation in finding the guy that he wanted, in doing what he had to do organizationally to get that guy interested, and then cutting a check. Because while the Giants cut a check, they might have cut a check to a guy that has limited experience. And the main reason they had to hire a guy like Joe Judge was because of their refusal to fire the most toxic general manager in recent memory. Okay, let's dive into the weekend games because it's the playoffs. And second round of the playoffs, the best teams are now playing, the 1 and 2 seeds, and the Ravens, the Chiefs, the Niners, and Seattle. And what I did is I'll just go in the order of the games. So we will start with the Vikings at Levi Stadium taking on the San Francisco 49ers. Yours truly will be in attendance. And it wasn't cheap, you know, because I sit with the fans, not a media guy, even though I am a media guy, kind of. I'm a hybrid. But I like sitting with the people. And the problem sitting with the people in this area is it's so much money. Now, I'm going with some wealthy friends. I'm kind of keeping my fingers crossed. They're just like, yeah, you're good. I got you. But I don't know. You know, I think I'm going to get asked for a Venmo here on Saturday. But it's playoff football. I haven't been to a playoff football game. I guess I went to the Super Bowl 4 or 5 years ago. But that was free, too. I mean, these playoff tickets, geez Louise, they are expensive. They are really, really expensive. But you get to see really good football. Vikings getting 7 points as of recording this against the Niners. Let's start with the Vikings. The huge upset against the Saints. Their formula is very, very easy. I wrote about it. I did kind of a breakdown talking to people in the league on their personnel. Their personnel is excellent. They have blue-chip players at every level on offense and defense, from the two pass rushers to Kendricks to Harrison Smith to Mike Zimmer, the play caller and the head coach, you know, to Dalvin Cook and Thielen and Diggs. Their formula is simple. Run the ball, dictate you on defense. If they run the ball, control the clock, they can dictate their defense. When they are behind, they can't. And at talking to people in the league, when you look at the Saints game, they got to control the clock. They were up early, and Zimmer got to dictate the game. Because when he gets you in second and third and long, he has Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter, who, according to my friends in the NFL, and just when you look around, is the best pass rushing duo right now in the league. So when they are up and those guys get to pin their ears back, it's game over. There's nothing you can do. And they dominated, let me repeat, dominated Drew Brees, those two guys, and Sean Payton. The pass rush, Zimmer mix up his coverages, but they have some weaknesses. On defense, Xavier Rhodes can't cover anybody at this point. He's a shell of himself, yet he carries himself like he's still an elite player. Trey Waynes can run, not great ball skills. Mackenzie Alexander, decent nickel. Their safeties, Harrison Smith's good. As a buddy in the league told me, Harrison Smith versus George Kittle, that's like LeBron versus Kawhi. That is blue chipper on blue chipper. You know, that's big. That's a big boy matchup. Now, no one I don't think can cover George Kittle, but if anyone's going to have a chance, it's going to be a guy like Harrison Smith. So, ultimately, Kyle Shanahan versus Mike Zimmer, that's as good of a schematical matchup as you'll see. The A-gap pressures, the mixing up the coverages, the players versus Kyle, his scheme, his players, which are really good. Big moment for Jimmy. I think that's, you know, close to a wash. I think the Niners will score on him. I think Zimmer will make some plays. I think that's pretty even. Where I don't think it's even is on offense, on the Vikings offense versus the 49ers defense. When they can run Dalvin Cook, they can win any game. When they run and they kind of dominate the ground, meaning they don't allow their quarterback to throw. When I say don't allow him to throw, I mean all of his throws then are off play action. And when you dictate that he has to drop back on first, second, and third down because he's down, let's say 10 points in the second half, that's where Kirk Cousins is just screwed. He can't carry you that way. But if he gets to be in rhythm off play action because it's second and five and hitting digs, Diva Diggs, and Thielen, which I guess he cut himself at practice. He has stitches. That's something to keep an eye on because he made basically the game-winning catch when he tracked the ball down the seam against the Saints. But you look at the 49ers' defensive line. You got D Ford coming back. Nick Bosa's defensive rookie of the year. It's not official, but it is official because he will be. You got Buckner and Armstead kicking ass and taking names against a pretty shitty unit. Their right tackle, O'Neal's a good player. As I was told by a guy in the league, their center, Garrett Bradbury, their first-round pick, he just a guy. Their guards are average, and Riley Reiff's kind of just a guy, too. So you can get after their ass. But the zone scheme, and Kyle does a good job with this, too, with San Francisco, is you don't need maulers. So you can get by with average offensive line because it's really just a positional blocking situation. You don't have to. Like back when Jim Harbaugh ran the 49ers, they ran the power scheme where you needed guards and tackles to kind of shove you around, especially your guards. That's not what the Vikings depend on. So you have to just hit them right in the mouth, and the best way to combat a zone scheme is be really physical up front. And that's what the 49ers are. So unless Dalvin Cook, to me, runs for 120-plus yards, I think the Niners win this game pretty convincingly. Now, if the Vikings get an early lead like they did against the Saints, then they get to dictate the game. And at the end of the day, for a guy, Kirk Cousins, which, you know, he's a solid player. I think he's so highly criticized because he makes so much money. But we know who he is. If he has the run game going, he can pick you apart because they got weapons. And they got a top-five roster in the league. If he's behind, they're in trouble. He's not going to carry them on the road against a team like the Niners. Yeah, he played well against the New Orleans Saints, but he did not carry them. Cook did, and the defense did. And that is their formula. And I don't think that formula is going to work against the Niners. Team speed on defense is too good. They're just too physical. They love running that kind of sweep toss play. Well, here's the thing. All the Niners DBs hit. They're all physical. You can't run it to Richard Sherman because he will just take people out. And then Fred Warner can run sideline to sideline. And then even the other side, Akella Weatherspoon will throw his body around. They got Kwaski Tartt coming back and Jimmy Ward and even their backup safety, Harris. They all lay wood. There is not one soft guy in their secondary. So when your secondary hits and you have one of the more physical, fast defensive lines and then you have, you know, tackling machines at linebacker, it's just hard to run the ball against them. I think given the way that the Vikings want to run the ball. Plus, another thing to keep an eye on in this game, both teams' defenses are used to looking at the scheme they're about to see. The zone running, stretch, play action, the boots, the nakeds and the nudes, as Tom Coughlin once called it. So it's, I like the Niners, but I will not dispute the Vikings' talent, their ability, and even their head coach. While he may be old and crusty, the guy can coach defense. So I'm not going to gamble on this game because I can't go, and if the Niners win and they don't cover and I take the Niners -7, I would be angry. But I would take the Niners, though. I think the Vikings, if their formula is able to work, they are a valiant foe. Titans versus the Ravens. Tennessee +9.5. Mark Ingram's injured. You know, that calf injury, I guess he re-injured it. As the last couple days, he hasn't been at practice. That's a big deal because he's a stud. Like, he's really, really good. Now, Lamar's the engine that makes the thing go, but Mark Ingram's a really good player. Their coaching staff with Wink Martindale on defense, their defense has been unreal. I mean, they traded for Marcus Peters. He's been a playmaker for them. Their front's been great. The Baltimore's just been top to start to finish, best team in the league. Here's what I wonder, and I am pro Lamar. I didn't like Lamar coming out. I still don't really love the running quarterback, big picture, but clearly I saw it with Kaepernick. You're seeing it with Lamar. You even saw it the 1 year with RG3. You can win with him in the present, like for a couple years. Now, eventually, Lamar, you have to become a drop back passer because you just can't afford to take hits. You'll end up getting injured. That's not an opinion. That's a fact. But usually in the playoffs, you get put in situations where it's second and long, third and long, assuming that they can catch Lamar, which they might not be able to. Though the Titans, when you watch that game against the Patriots, they have a lot of team speed in their front seven. Evans, the middle linebacker, the dude from Bama, 54, was all over the place last weekend. The kid they drafted, Jeffrey Simmons from Mississippi State, that had the torn ACL coming out of the draft, is a monster. Vrabel's understanding, just being around Belichick all those years as a player, knowing when you face an elite player, whether it's Marshall Faulk, whether it's Terrell Owens, whether whoever it is in a big playoff game, you know, the Peyton Manning years, take that guy out. So you would imagine his mind, it's easier said than done, but him and Dean Pease are just going to try to take Lamar Jackson out as a runner. Because if you can do that, then you force him to pass. Now, last year against the Chargers, he's a much better player now. They forced him to do that and he couldn't do that. I do think you'll have a chance if you can just neutralize him on the ground, hold him probably to like under 50, and force him to pass. And in situations where it's second and third and long, and he's got to pick you apart. And he may be able to. He's made just that good of a player now. And if he's able to do that, then a guy like me will say, yeah, I think this guy's going to be a good player in this league for a long time. I mean, he's a good player now, but be able to sustain it. And that's what I wonder. Now, it's pretty clear what the Titans' game plan is going to be. A lot like the Vikings, have Henry run for like 150 yards. Control the clock on the ground. And just dominate the ground with that guy. And then occasionally throw the ball to A.J. Brown. That's going to be the formula for the Titans. I'm going to take the Ravens. If I'm going to gamble on this game, I'd probably take the Titans +9.5. And it's more just a little unknown with Lamar. Maybe it's unfair, but last year in the playoff game, though I think he's a lot better. It's just that 9.5 is a lot of points for the Titans that just beat the Patriots. Now, the Patriots are flawed, but the Titans are just good. Chiefs the Texans at the Chiefs. Arrowhead, this game's going to be bonkers. I think no team over the last month is playing better than the Chiefs. Their defense had that stretch, I think, in December where they averaged like 10 points a game. They didn't allow any opponent to go over 20 points. Their defense has been lights out. Now, they did lose their rookie safety, Thornhill, that was playing next to Honey Badger and who'd been balling. That's a big loss. But Honey Badger, their front four, Spags is kind of, they're all kind of coming together. I actually trust the Chiefs' defense in this situation. And anytime that I can bet on Mahomes or have Mahomes as my quarterback, I feel good. There is pressure on Coach Reed that just these win playoff games. I mean, anytime the playoff starts and you have all these playoff victories, you have all this success, just to win the Super Bowl. I've been on record, and I'm pretty confident Andy Reid's going to win a Super Bowl. Whether it's this year, whether it's next year, whether in the next couple years, it's going to happen. I do think this year, the way it's shaped up, is as good a chance as any. They've already beat the Ravens, so if they can get by the Texans, they're really just 60 minutes away, assuming the Ravens win, that they have the formula that took Lamar Jackson out early in the season. Now, granted, that was like the end of September, early October, but it still happened. Now, and if somehow the Titans upset the Ravens, the Chiefs, if they win this game, which they would know going into it, they'll be hosting the AFC Championship game. Here's the problem with just having 100% confidence the Chiefs are going to win. Watson's a pretty special player. A borderline legend already. What he did in college, what he's doing now, carrying a team that I don't even think is that good. They have one legit wide receiver, and if Fuller plays, which you can never count on, because that hamstring can pull at any moment. If he plays, their offense is really good. But this game, outside early January in Kansas City, is going to be cold. They're a little more potent in the dome. I like the Chiefs, I wouldn't say handily in this game, but pretty convincingly. A little like last year when they played the Colts, they just kind of dominated. They get no coach in the league's better off a bye than Andy Reid. The Chiefs are just poised to make a run. Like, this is the year. This is the year to make a run. You got no Brady. You got no Belichick. You just got to go through Lamar, a guy you've already beat, and take out Bill O'Brien, which is not a great coach. I've come full circle. I did a 180. I used to think he was really good. Now really watching him tight this year, I just think he's kind of a guy. And their talent is just not that good. But anytime you have an elite quarterback, you can't discount them. Chiefs, I'm going to go like 28-13. Then the final game of the weekend, Seattle at Green Bay. Every Seattle game looks the same. The scores just change. And I'm done picking them to lose. Now, I'm not necessarily going to pick them to win this week, but I think the line is reflective of a team that isn't that good. You know, not they should be like plus 10, and they're plus 4.5. Because you just can't discount Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson in playoff games. They're just too potent. It's more Russell. But Green Bay, who I think we all agree is one of the worst two seeds we've ever seen. Now, Rodgers statistically had a worse season than last year. The last time we saw him 2 weeks ago against the Lions, he was not good, overthrowing guys left and right. I don't really trust Matt LaFleur, mainly just because what has he done to earn my trust? Yeah, they went 13-3, but I don't really know what he did. Their defense is really good, and that's where I think the difference in this game could be. Za'Darius Smith has been a borderline defensive player of the year. Kenny Clark's really good. Preston Smith's solid. Their corners are solid. They're just, Mike Pettine's one of the better defensive coordinators in the NFL. I think when you look at this game, you got to take DK Metcalf away. That's kind of been their guy. That's really their potent weapon down the field. He was a huge difference in that Philadelphia Eagles game just because he can't just run. His ball skills are really, really good. So Russell Wilson, who's one of the best deep throwers, probably in my lifetime the best deep thrower I've ever seen, just throw it up to the guy. Let him go make a play. And I don't know. I mean, I'm very, very tempted to take Seattle outright to win this game. I definitely would take Seattle plus 4.5. It's just, I still view Aaron Rodgers like an elite player, even if the film tells me he's not some games, and it's statistically he's not quite as potent as he was 5-6 years ago. It's just Green Bay at home, Lambeau. It's got a little bit of a collegiate feel to it. It's just like, it's hard to bet against Alabama at Alabama, right? It's hard to bet against Ohio State at Ohio State, even when their teams aren't as good. It's hard to bet against Green Bay in the playoffs at Green Bay. Now, I would easily bet against them if they got to play the Niners in the NFC Championship game. But Seattle has maximized their talent this year. This is nowhere near Pete Carroll's best teams of like 12, 13, 14, 15. But they just find a way, man. And I think a big reason for it is Russell Wilson. He is just, you know, just one of the most special players we've ever seen. Can the running backs carry the Packers? They did earlier in the season, scored a bunch of touchdowns. You know, the Packers, can they control the game on the ground? One problem for them under the McCarthy years when they had the really good teams, their defense wasn't as good. As I said earlier with Mike Pettine, that's a kind of a different element that they're bringing to the table now. So I'm going to go, I'm tempted to go the upset, but I'll go Green Bay 28, Seattle 27. Maybe a walk-off Crosby field goal. Okay, let's dive into the Middlecoff mailbag. At John Middlecoff is my Instagram handle. That's where the people send me questions. And I'm going to start with Ben. If Belichick wants to move on from Brady, who would he bring in? I've actually had a decent amount of people ask me this. Who would Belichick's quarterback be without Brady? And unlike a lot of coaches that you know, like Coach Reed has been coaching now 20 years, has had so many different quarterbacks. You kind of have a feel, like, you know, an athletic, big arm guy. But he's also had Alex, but he's had an eclectic group. Belichick's had one starter for 20 years, and it's been Tom. Now he's drafted, you know, from Hoyer to Castle. Maybe Hoyer was an undrafted free agent. But, you know, the kid this year, Stidham, Jimmy G, you know, I don't know. Like, would he be interested in, like, Phillip Rivers? Would he want, like, an Andy Dalton to go with Stidham? Would, if Derek Carr was cut, would he want Carr? Your guess is as good as mine. I honestly have no feel. I would imagine that Josh, if he's still the offensive coordinator, and as of Thursday mid-morning, he still is of recording this, you know, he would have a lot of input. But I think your guess is as good as mine. We could list about five guys that are going to be hit the open market non-Brady, maybe some trade candidates. But you could convince me that he would clearly want a smart guy. Like, he's not going to do an idiot. But, you know, Dalton's smart. Rivers is smart. Would they change their offense? I don't know. Honestly, it's one of those that, you know me, you typically have an opinion. I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked with just about anything. Like, Cam, I'd be a little surprised. But why not? Maybe Belichick wants to more of a running offense. I don't know. I'm a senior at Kansas State and curious about your opinion on our new hire, if you follow. Do you think Chris Klieman is going to be an elite coach and be able to overcome Snyder's legacy? He has been off to a hot recruiting start, but seems to choke easy games, West Virginia, Navy, Texas, clock management issues. Yeah, I'll be honest, didn't watch that much K-State football. Isn't he the guy from North Dakota State that coached Carson Wentz? He clearly is a pretty high-level guy. I think Kansas State is, you know, it's a unique job. Like in California, like Fresno State. Like when I lived in Philly, Temple. Obviously, those are mid-majors, and Kansas State's, you know, a Power 5 conference. But it's, you know, it's Manhattan, Kansas. It doesn't pay as much as the other schools. But you can win there, and you can get a specific type of player. A tough, you know, not highly recruited kid. And that's kind of what they hung their hat on over the years with some JC transfers. I would say their comp probably on the West Coast, not Fresno. It'd be like Oregon State, where you can nail a couple undervalued recruits and get some transfers. And if you got a good coach, you can win. And so I think the guy, I can't break down his game management. I'm not watching. Even though I actually bet on Kansas State one game this season against Texas, and they covered. They ended up losing the game. But so yeah, I like the guy. Who do you think will have a bigger impact on the 49ers defense, Quan Alexander or D Ford? I think it'll be D Ford, just because they needed another edge rusher. Right now they've only had Bosa with D Ford out. Solomon Thomas is a run player. Buckner and Armstead are inside players. Their linebackers, Dre Greenlaw, was making plays for the last 2 months. I mean, without Dre Greenlaw, they would be the fifth seed. They might have got beat in Philly. Who knows? I think they would have beat Philly, but you know what I'm saying. Their need for D Ford is infinitely higher than their need for Quan. And their need for Quan's solid, just because you always want good players on the field. But to me, D Ford is a game changer. Because the other thing is, they don't ask D Ford to do much. They just ask him to pass rush. He won't play on base downs against the Vikings, who are going to run the football. He'll come in on 3rd and 8. Middlecoff mailbag. This might be late by the time the next podcast comes out, but I was curious. Do you think Jason Garrett would be a good fit for New York Giants? He will have a young Daniel Jones who's shown potential, a young Saquon Barkley who's definitely looked really good, and a pretty average receiving core. If I don't want to see young talent wasted by poor coaching, good fit, bad fit, waste their talent. Well, I don't think they could have hired Jason Garrett. They would have. It was already, and obviously you asked me this before you knew Joe Judge was the coach. I think Joe Judge should be interested in Jason Garrett to be his play caller. Like, that's the type of guy a coach like Joe Judge should want around him. Now, I don't know if they know each other. I would imagine they don't really. But it wouldn't shock me to see Jason Garrett on his staff. I've been told Joe Judge will not call plays, so he's going to need a play caller. Now, you'd also go, well, when's the last time Jason Garrett's called plays? It's been a while. Linehan, Kellen Moore, Cowboy fans would have to educate me on this. What has it been, like 5 years? So he hasn't called plays in a long time. But once upon a time, Jason Garrett was this hot offensive coaching candidate. You know, like he was like a Kyle Shanahan, a Sean McVay, a Matt Nagy, a Doug Peterson as a play caller. Those days are long since passed, but one thing Joe Judge is going to need is a guy with experience being a head coach on a staff. And clearly the Giants like Jason Garrett. You know, he's buttoned up, Ivy League guy, cleanly shaved, looks the part. And the Giants love that BS. So I would imagine that Jason Garrett might be on a staff. I know you were asking about the head coach, but they couldn't make him the head coach. They couldn't do that. What's your opinion on the Bills' touchdown on the kick that was overturned because the receiver gave himself up? Well, you can't call a fumble on that play. Like, it's clear the guy gave himself up. Like, it's completely obvious. You know, the letter of the law, like, the guy was giving himself up. He wasn't going to run the ball out. He caught it with, like, 2 yards away from the out-of-bounds line behind him. So, to me, that one's as black and white of a subjective call as you're going to have. Because if you, like, it's, we know what it looks like. I get the catches, but that's an easy one. He didn't fumble the ball. He wasn't throwing it just to the ground. He was throwing it to the referee. So I have no issue with them overturning that call. They got it right. What do you think about Cam Newton? Well, he's never really been my guy. You know, an inaccurate, kind of emotional roller coaster who now has injuries. So he's just not my type player. But I've never disputed his just elite talent and when he's on, his ability to dominate. But he is too hot and cold for me. You have to build the offense around his running ability, and rightfully so. That's always been what he's hung his hat on. I think his MVP year, he had 10 rushing touchdowns. They used to run quarterback power. But because he's so big, he takes on defenders, and his body's given up on him. So maybe he can have a bounce back, but I think there's a chance that he's just never the same guy. So again, he's not really my type guy. I'm a little like Colin with that, with my quarterbacks, the flash and all the bullshit. I don't care. I like a guy that's even keel, you know, that's just because at quarterback, you're going to have lows, you're going to have highs. You got to be kind of like Belichick as a coach. Now, I'm not saying you can't celebrate and stuff though. Like always doing his first down things used to be, and I'm not trying to be old man River that's 35, that sounds like he's 70, but it's like, come on, bro. You're a pro bowler. Just act like you've been there before. The Friday show makes the long commute home enjoyable. So let's say you're the GM of the Miami Dolphins. Do you trade up to draft Tua or do you sit back and hope he's there at 5? The idea of trading up for Sam Bradford 2.0 is making me nauseous. And if I'm trading back and accumulating more picks for 2021 in hopes of landing Football Jesus or Justin Fields. I think it is difficult to ever play the long game with a quarterback. As you saw this year with Brian Flores, so like if you're thinking about, can we get Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields? Well, if your team's going to be better, you have 3 draft picks this year, and you're going to sign some guys in free agency. Brian Flores proved like you're probably not going to be a 2 or 3 win team. More than likely next year, you'll win like 6 or 7 games. So you won't be in the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes. And whoever's bad enough to draft Trevor Lawrence, they're just going to take him. So I think you have to be focused this year. I agree. There are legitimate question marks about Tua's health. I mean, it's obvious, right? He's got a broken hip. He's had multiple ankle injuries. He's never finished a season. Even the season that he quote-unquote finished in last year, 2018, when Jalen Hurts came in for him because he got hurt in the Georgia game, in the SEC championship game. So I think it's a difficult discussion. I would just take a quarterback this year. I would roll the dice on Tua. Or take Justin Herbert. My problem is I think Tua is so much better than Justin Herbert. I'd take the chance for Sam Bradford 2.0. Just because if he is able to stay on the field, he's just dramatically better. I've always wondered how sick days work in NFL for players and coaches. Is it like a normal job where you call your supervisor, or are you required, especially as a player, to come in and see a doctor? Is this negotiable? Well, I remember I got sick a couple times when I was a scout, and I would just go to Howie's office and be like, bro, I'm about to throw up. He's like, go home. Now, granted, I didn't dictate a game plan or anything that week. With a player, it's pretty easy. You just send them home because you don't want your team to get sick. So either, you know, if it's if it's a higher character guy you trust. Like if Matt Slater calls Bill Belichick and is like, I've been throwing up all morning. He's like, stay home. We'll send a doctor to you. If it's like a questionable rookie, you're like, is he just hungover? Is he lying? With a coach, it's hard. You know, the head coach can't just go home. Maybe he could go home a little early that night. So yeah, it's complicated. Luckily, unlike a lot of jobs, you have the access to the doctors and the trainers and the drugs to help you out right in your facility. So it's kind of a unique situation. It's not, it's you don't get like sick days or anything like that. It's just send a guy home or, you know, if a coach is puking, whatever, someone else carries his load that week. Even though I don't remember in my time in college or the pros that many coaches getting sick. They're just like machines, at least not in season. You just mentally aren't allowed to get sick. But with players, it's like any normal person. You just send them home. But the difference is there are no sick days. Like if it's legitimately like you got the flu or whatever. That's a pretty good question, though. Could you see Belichick taking a punt on Josh Rosen, assuming he stays and Brady leaves? Or is it just over for the kid? That's a good question. It kind of feels over. Now, would he just acquire Josh Rosen for nothing? Sure. But if you're the Miami Dolphins, you did trade a second-round pick for him. So are you just going to give him away for nothing? The problem is his value right now is probably like a six-round pick. I think it's kind of a complicated situation. But if Belichick liked him, which I think is a big if, it would, I could see that. Your takes on the NFL current events is not only informative, but are so funny, I really enjoy listening. Thanks. Unrelated to football, I'm starting a personal finance podcast geared toward 20-somethings. I'm releasing pretty soon, but I'm wondering if you could quickly touch on some high-level advice for someone getting their podcast off the ground. Listen, I think like anything, I go back to my Cal Poly days, you know, just state school kid. The motto at Cal Poly was learn by doing. And you can plan and you can think about stuff and you can go to YouTube and study, you know, type in whatever you want, right? How to create a podcast, how to financially become a millionaire. And you can buy books and you can listen to audiobooks and you can watch movies about it until you actually do it. Like I'm thinking back to when I just first started doing this podcast, how much smoother and better it is now. You just got to do it. And, you know, I'm lucky both of my podcast, my other podcast, I had a built-in audience because I had a radio show in the Bay Area for 5 years or 4 years. And then this, I have Colin Coward distributing it. So I have advantages given my podcast. I didn't just start it from scratch in the sense where I didn't have anyone know who I am. So it is a challenge to get people to listen. There is competition. We're all fighting for attention. Know this, you come into my space, I'm trying to get that listener to come to me first. Now, granted, you said personal finance. I think you just, my advice now with Instagram and Twitter, promote there, promote on Facebook. You know, just do a lot of grassroots marketing. You got to be active. You got to be, you know, as much as social media pisses me off, Twitter more than I love Instagram. It's really a huge part of your job in this business. It's, you know, they say like recruiting is the lifeblood of college sports. I think social media is kind of the lifeblood of my job. Just attention seeking, trying to get people's attention and then trying to drive people to my, whatever I do. So good luck. Just start doing it and then just figure out what works, what doesn't. And the difficult part is getting people to listen. But if you're good, people eventually find you. I am a big believer the cream always rises. I really enjoy your podcast. I'm a Colts fan who had high hopes for the season prior to Luck retirement. Going forward, what do you think is the likelihood we trade up in the draft and snag a quarterback? Do you see us sticking with Brissett or dipping into the free agent quarterback market? I would assume they would go free agent quarterback. You know, Phillip Rivers, a Cam, a Dalton, someone to push Brissett more than leverage their pick to try to get a quarterback. Now, if a quarterback falls to them, I could see them doing that. But the way Chris Ballard's history would go, he plays it a little safer. Now, any time a guy that's played it safe forever, sometimes a guy takes a big swing. So that can never be discounted. My guess would be he goes the free agent quarterback market and tries to push Brissett that way. Tampa Bay is a sneaky good spot for Tom Brady if he leaves New England. Receiving corps and tight ends are great. Arians should have Brady's respect and is an offensive-minded coach. Defense has potential if the secondary can be bolstered. Yeah, that's not crazy at all. I mean, they got Mike Evans. They have Chris Godwin. They have a running back in Rojo. They got the couple tight ends. Bruce Arians, a great offensive coach. Like you said, they got Todd Bowles in defense. The division, the Saints, while they were a good regular season game, they're not, yeah, they look kind of flawed. The Panthers are going through a rebuild and a new coach, and the Falcons, you just never know with them. So, yeah, I think the only counter to that would be how often, you know, is Tom Brady going to play for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? Now, no state income tax. Could they pay, instead of franchising Jameis, why not just give Tom Brady $30 million? Yeah, I mean, would I rather have Tom Brady than Jameis Winston? Yeah, you bet your ass I would. But would Tom Brady go to Tampa? That one's kind of hard to see. Why does Sean Payton, damn it, why does Sean Payton keep getting love as some sort of genius? He's routinely talked about as a top three or five coach, but chokes in the playoffs year after year. Meanwhile, guys like Peterson get somewhat ignored, but Payton couldn't get the Saints to beat primetime Kirk. They should have beat the Vikings both years, and the Rams team that won last year wasn't some world beater. The Saints get routinely talked about as scary or a team no one would want to play, yet that happens when the lights are on. They struggle against a Philly team, starting Foles, or lose to Kirk Cousins. What gives? Is Sean Payton a little overrated? At this point, am I missing something? Well, I think it's really hard to win in the playoffs. Let's just state that as a fact. It is very, very, very difficult to win in January. Mike Zimmer is Belichick, Fangio, top three defensive mind. So it's hard to beat Zimmer in the playoffs. Sean McVay, you could argue the ref screwed him. They should have won that game. Also, when you win a Super Bowl or a national championship early, you're a made man. Bob Stoops won a national championship in his second year, was a coach for the next 15 years. And just, you know, got a pass a lot of the time. So, yeah, you get up when you win the Super Bowl, especially with a franchise like the Saints, you get a borderline lifetime pass. The other thing is they did go 13-3. But I say it all the time with the NBA, we're at the point now, football, we still care about the regular season because the regular season is really important. You do have to get it done in the playoffs. And you're right, he just hasn't got it done in the playoffs. Just simply not good enough. It's just point, period, point blank, end of story. So yeah, I wouldn't say he's overrated because you talk to people in the coaching fraternity, they still think he's one of the best in the business. But yeah, he's left something to be desired over the last, you know, 5-6 years. Just, you got to win in the playoffs. Remember, there was a Niner game that he lost to Alex Smith in 2011, the year before Bountygate happened, and he got suspended, which was a bad loss. Wanted to pop in and say I'm a fan of your show and how you keep shit real. Appreciate you. Usually when it's the other guys on a podcast, I turn it off. You're one of the dudes I'll listen to. Keep it real, man. Guess that wasn't a question, just a little compliment for me. Thanks. We hang our hat on no frauds. So I talk like I talk. 24/7, 365. This is no different than how I'd be talking if I was sitting next to you at a game or drinking a beer at a bar. I am me. My mom's like, why do you swear? I'm like, Mom, I just talk like I talk. Now, I don't swear here out of respect as much as some of my other places, but I just talk like I talk. It's not, you know, I'm an educated guy. My mom's like, you sound so uneducated. Yeah, Mom, I got multiple degrees here. You're the one that dropped out of college, but I'm not taking a shot at my mom. But it's just like that generation is like, yeah, it's just a swear word, you know? I know Colin gave up swearing. I'm not. Mainly because I don't have that many words to go to. Big Colts fan and wanted to get your opinion of Tom Brady or Cam Newton coming to Indy. I feel like it's unlikely either actually signed, but with a great offensive line and Frank Reich, yeah. Do you think, I always screw up that name. I used to call him Frank Reich. It's Frank Reich. Do you think that Indy would be a better team? With Tom Brady, they would probably be the favorites in the AFC South. But I keep getting back to is, it was led by Ryan Grigson, but the Colts brand was all over it. They embarrassed Tom Brady. You embarrassed the GOAT. I was offended for Tom Brady, as most people in football should be with the Deflategate. Like, that was a joke. Like, it really was. Like, you guys got your ass kicked, and you're, like, pointing the finger at Tom Brady. But new regime, Chris Ballard, like you said, new head coach. I have a hard time seeing Tom Brady play for the Colts, the team that ultimately led the charge to get him suspended. Though, from a football standpoint, it makes sense. But if you're Tom Brady, and again, different humans, but that the horseshoe was the reason that you missed four games. And they tried to ruin your reputation, led by Mortensen and some of the guys on television. That was an embarrassing stretch. I mean, even Colts fans, like, take a step back. Tom Brady kicked the shit out of everyone for the next several years after the quote-unquote deflator was changing the balls. That wasn't why you got your ass kicked. You got your ass kicked because your team wasn't good enough. But if you had Tom, I don't think you mess with Cam Newton. If you had Tom Brady, I think you could win the Super Bowl. But I don't think he's going there. I really don't. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Enjoy the divisional round. And yeah, have a great weekend. And got football, man. This is we got four games. So we got these four games. We got the national championship on Monday. That's five. Then we got two more playoff games in the AFC and NFC championship game. That's seven in the Super Bowl. We have eight legit football games left. Think about that. Enjoy it. Enjoy it while it's here. Because it won't be here that much longer. Adios.